This episode is made possible by Nielsen. Sharpen your media planning with Nielsen's Upfronts New Fronts guide. Whether it's linear TV or streaming, Nielsen helps you optimize reach and impact. Head to Nielsen.com for much more information.
But that really doesn't paint the full picture. It's a really important part of teens' digital lives. It's their favorite platform, and it really is where they're spending a lot of their time, even if the average age of a user is older than that.
Hey gang, it's Monday, March 18th. Paola, Jasmine, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Nielsen. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two folks. One of them is our demographics analyst based in New York, the city version. It's Paola Flores Marquez.
Hello.
Hello there. We're also joined by our principal analyst who covers all things social media based in California. It's Jasmine Emberg.
Hey Marcus. Hey everyone.
Hello there. Today we're talking about how young people are using the internet, but we start with today's fact. The oldest continuously running hotel in the world started when?
I have no idea, but I like this fact already.
It's a good one. They're all good. Who are we kidding? Some of them are good. Most of them.
I'm going to guess that it's some tiny little like pub with like a boarding room somewhere in England. So I'm going to say somewhere in like the 1500s.
Okay. Close. It's not really close. You got about 800 years further back to go before you get to, let me say this right, the Nishiyama Onsen Kyunkun, which is a Japanese resort not far from Mount Fuji, which has been in business since 705 AD.
Wow.
According to the Guinness World Records, Andrea Romano of Travel and Leisure notes that the hotel has been passed down, this is remarkable, within the same family for 52 generations.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So for over 1,300 years, historical samurai to A-list celebrities and politicians to ordinary folks have been going there to stay and visit the natural, crystal clear hot water baths. The hotel has 37 rooms priced at about $400 a night.
There's a hotel that's as old as the millennium. That's wild.
That is a very reasonable price. I was expecting it to be much more than that.
Yeah, especially with just 37 rooms.
Mm-hmm.
It's my vacation sorted. I'm kidding. I can't afford that. Anyway, today's real topic, young people's internet habits. In today's episode, first in the lead, we'll cover how young folks use the internet. Then for another news, we'll discuss whether 20-somethings are maybe leaving TikTok and the likelihood of a TikTok ban as well. And no, you're not listening to an episode from 2020. This is a new potential ban. But we start with the lead. And we're talking about young people, mainly Gen Z people, but some kids as well. So we'll kind of flip back and forth. We're talking about how they're using the internet, how their behavior is different from one another, because the Gen Z is a big age range. I believe, what are we at now? 12 to 27 ballpark? I think
around
that's the
there.
Age range.
Yeah, 12 to 26 is the last time I checked by my math.
Okay.
The old
12 to 26, so around there. It's a lot. It's a big difference between a 12-year-old and a 26-year-old. So there's some variety within the generation. And then we'll look at their social media use, and then we'll look at how their parents come into the equation. But we start with looking at what's one major way that young Gen Z folks' internet habits do differ from older Gen Z folks. Pal.
Currently, we're seeing more younger Gen Z folks on Snapchat than older Gen Z folks. I think, you know, Snapchat offers like a modicum of privacy with its disappearing messages, particularly when we talk about how closely their parents track their phones and check their phones. So that could be one option. We've also seen in our data that they're more likely to use Snapchat for stories as well, in addition to communication. So that's another aspect of that.
Okay. So Snapchat, the preferred platform.
I wouldn't say it's their preferred, but I'll say they'll use it at higher rates than older Gen Z. Yeah.
Good distinction.
Yes. So they're more likely to use it for communication, whereas like older Gen Z will use like Instagram.
Okay. So it might be their third favorite, you know, for argument's sake, with 30% versus older Gen Z, it might be their third favorite, but with like 10%.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the penetration is higher amongst
Got
younger.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Jasmine, what about for you? What stands out to you when you look at these younger cohorts and the differences between the younger ones and the younger, slightly older ones?
Yeah, so I just wrote a report. It looked more at Gen Alpha versus Gen Z rather than the differentiation between Gen Z, although you're really smart to ask that question because, you know, again, you're right that a 12-year-old is going to use social media very differently than a 26-year-old. But so Gen Alpha generally are defined as 0 to 11-year-olds. And the reason I wrote this report was really because of all of the momentum that we saw in Congress recently and among consumers about protecting young people online. And so I started researching, you know, how are they actually behaving on social media? And the big thing that stood out to me was just how important YouTube is to young kids' social media lives and digital lives overall. So it's about 97% of 0 to 11-year-olds who will use YouTube at least once a month this year. And that is well ahead of any of the other social platforms. Of course, most of them have a 13-plus age limit. Doesn't necessarily mean there aren't any kids who are younger than that on those platforms. But YouTube certainly has a stronghold among 0 to 11-year-olds. And one of the pieces of research that also really stood out to me was about how frequently those 0 to 12-year-olds or 2 to 12-year-olds are influenced by commercials they see on YouTube versus other platforms. So it's just furthering the argument that YouTube really plays an integral part in their lives.
Yeah, it was a chasm, wasn't it, between asking where do you see ads, and YouTube was so far ahead, second place. I can't even remember it because it was like almost like joint second with everything else because YouTube was so far out in front.
I will also say that that chasm is reflected in their tablet use as well. Like their adoption of tablets is so much higher and it goes hand in hand with that.
Absolutely. And, you know, yeah. I mean, tablets make it really easy for parents to just, you know, give their kids something to do when they're out at a restaurant or, you know, need them to be entertained. And YouTube, because it has such a wide library of free children's content, and it also has a kids version, not saying that all the kids are using it, but it definitely has a kids version.
Yes.
That, you know, really makes it a top choice for parents when they're trying to entertain their kids. And interestingly, it's also led some of the streamers to kind of cut back on their kids' programming as a result.
You mentioned more and more voices calling for the protection of kids online. It does seem like the tide is turning. Jasmine, you had a stat in your report which leapt out to me. Almost all, 90% of US adults believe social media is extremely, very, or somewhat harmful to children and adolescents. That's from October of last year's Civic Science Survey. Looking at social media use, though, focusing more on teens for this question, we're going to play Story by Numbers, a segment we play in our banking and payments show, where we look at a couple of numbers that help us kind of tell the story of a certain thing. And this is going to be telling the story of teen social media usage. So I'll start with one from you, Jasmine, then we'll go to Pal for her first, and then we'll pivot back. Jasmine, what's your first number in terms of something that tells the story of teen social media usage?
So my first one is from Gallup and Institute for Family Studies, and it's cited in my report, and it's that 88% of teens who use social media for more than 4 hours a day do so for entertainment. And it's also the top choice for teens who use social media less frequently throughout the day as well. And I think this ties in really well to what you just brought up, which is that so many people believe that social media is harmful to children and adolescents, and it certainly can be. There are really traumatic stories about the harm that social media has caused, but it can also do a lot of good, right? And, you know, most teens on there, just like most social users overall, aren't there to engage in combative or, you know, inappropriate ways. They really are there to be entertained. And it's also really reflective of the shift that we've seen in social media overall from this idea of it being a place where you network to a place where you're consuming content.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. More social entertainment than anything. Paola, what's your first number?
So my first number is that almost 30% of US teens spend more than 6 hours on social media, tying into Jasmine's point.
Per day or per year?
Daily time spent with social media.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's a lot of time. Less than 10% less than an hour. So everyone else kind of falls in between those two numbers. That's a lot of time spent. So that's my first number. And then my second number.
Tell me.
So I did a little bit more digging into that to like think about how it worked demographically, and I found that social media usage is higher among teens from lower income households. So 71% on TikTok versus like 61%, which is not, it is a bit a difference, but not as massive of a difference. But, you know, I think we can think about like there are, you know, going to the movies is expensive, like going out to dinner is expensive, right? Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of limitations that are being put on teens in addition to like the effects of the pandemic, creating more social spaces online. So I think that's all compounding to sort of funnel more teens in that economic bracket in that direction.
All right, Jasmine, what's your second number?
My second number is from Piper Sandler, and it's that 38% of US teens consider TikTok to be their favorite platform. And this one stood out to me because during the January 31st Senate hearing on protecting children online, TikTok CEO, of course, argued that TikTok was primarily a place for adults and said that the average age of a TikTok user is over 30. And that certainly could be true. We predict that about 81% of monthly TikTok users here in the US will be 18 or older this year, but that really doesn't paint the full picture. It's a really important part of teens' digital lives. It's their favorite platform, and it really is where they're spending a lot of their time, even if the average age of a user is older than that.
So I got two numbers quickly. One was looking at YouTube in terms of teens. This is 13 to 17 year olds' favorite platform. So YouTube, 93% of teens use YouTube according to Pew Research. So nearly everyone. And in this study, TikTok was in a pretty distant second place. I'm wondering, Jasmine, when Neil Mohan, CEO of YouTube, is going to have to go before the Senate committee hearing.
So that was my big question, right? And it was something that the other executives raised too, because he was notably absent from the hearing, as were device makers like Apple. And all of these companies really do play a role in terms of protecting kids and teens online. I think one of the things that has helped allay some lawmaker concerns around YouTube is the fact that A, it has a kids version. Again, it's not perfect, but it certainly can help. And I think, you know, the overall sort of takeaway for me is that it's not about the size of the audience, right? It's really about the influence that a platform has and, you know, its algorithms and content recommendation systems, as well as, you know, other issues like TikTok, of course, and its connection to China. But yeah, I mean, it's a big question. And, you know, I'm wondering too, when he'll be called to testify in front of Congress.
Alongside the, because they had the bosses of Facebook, or let's say Meta, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Snap, X were all there, but head of YouTube, notably absent. My second number I had real quick was basically showing that they never switch off. Nearly half, 46% of teens say they're online almost constantly. That's nearly half. The other half say they're online several times a day. So it's not like they are offline by any stretch.
Online overall or on social media?
This was online. These numbers were just online, not on social media.
Wow.
All right, let's look at how parents come into the equation. Pew Research Center just put out a study on how teens and parents approach screen time. As I mentioned, nearly half of these young people say they're online almost constantly. But this new study looks at how young people are navigating this always-on environment. One of the key findings was that around 73% of US teens said they often or sometimes felt happy or peaceful when they don't have their smartphones, versus around 40% who said having their device made them feel anxious, upset, or lonely. But Paola, I'll start with you. What to you was the most interesting finding from this research from Pew about how teens and parents approach screen time?
I think the one that stood out for me is that nearly half of teens, about 40%, say that their parent is at least sometimes distracted by their phone when they're trying to talk to them.
I also wrote that one down, 46%.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's indicative of how addicted all of us are to our phones, regardless of age.
Absolutely. But,
yeah.
What was staggering about that, though, is it's more, that was a lot more than parents saying that teens were distracted when trying to talk to them.
Yeah, and it noted that they frequently argue in both directions, like parents get on teens and teens get on parents about it.
Yeah, it's a heartbreaking one.
And also, as someone of Mexican descent, I thought it was really interesting that Latino families are more likely to argue about it. And like, that tracks culturally. That tracks.
Jasmine, what stood out to you?
I got to say, I do frequently have that argument with my mom, too. But mine was kind of similar. I noted that one as well. But I'll say the other one that was interesting to me, which was about parental snooping. And half of parents say they have looked through their teen's phone. I'm certainly not a proponent of parents spying on their children or anyone spying on anybody, but it just stood out to me because there really is a role that parents need to play as well in protecting kids and what they do online. And one of the things I think about, you know, is when I first signed up for, and I'm going to age myself now, but MySpace and a Finnish social network called Irk Galleria, which no longer exists, but was very similar to Instagram back in the day. I mean, my parents just had no idea what it was, what I was doing, or even really how to help me kind of navigate the world of social media and social networking. And maybe I'm naive, but my hope is that as, you know, generations who do understand a little bit more about social media have children, maybe they'll be better equipped to help their kids navigate these waters.
Are we surprised? I'm surprised there's not some kind of a, maybe civics is the wrong word, but some kind of a digital usage, wellness, whatever, class in schools.
Yeah, I mean, we had computer classes in school, so I'm also very surprised that's not a component of it.
Yeah, what to watch out for, how to use it, what it can do to you.
So actually in Finland, they have incorporated that into classrooms.
Oh,
and
interesting.
A lot of it has to do with understanding how to detect good information and bad information online.
That's
wonderful. And it has to do with media literacy. And I remember a few years ago, I know Facebook tried to, or did actually put together some media literacy courses. They didn't do very well. But I do think that, you know, here too in schools, we should be teaching students how to use social media and technology overall as a tool to build rather than destroy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Trust Finland. Top of, there's a reason they're top of the rankings in education every single year. Jasmine's full report is called Youth and Social Media, How US Kids and Teens Use Platforms from TikTok to Snapchat to YouTube. And there's a ton in there, including implications for marketers and the platforms, which we didn't have time to get to, but there's a bunch in there on that topic as well. Pro Plus subscribers can head to emarketer.com. Link is, of course, in the show notes. We move to the fourth quarter of the show today. In other news, why some 20-somethings are saying no to TikTok, and is the new push to ban TikTok for real? Story one. Why some 20-somethings are saying no to TikTok, the latest trend, quitting the app to focus more on life and work, writes Julie Jargon of The Journal. She believes that the 20-somethings she interviewed aren't outliers. As they told her, many of their friends have also deleted the app or scaled back their use in recent months. Miss Jargon goes on to cite some data.ai numbers supporting her point, saying TikTok's US average monthly users between the ages of 18 and 24 fell nearly 9% from 2022 to 2023. But Paola, 20-somethings are saying no to TikTok. Apparently, is this something or nothing?
I think it's something, but not enough to really make a major difference.
Okay.
There's some civic science data a while back, like last summer, that demonstrated that Gen Zers, adult Gen Zers, 18 to 24, are the most likely of any generation to take a break from social media, but their breaks are really short compared to everyone else's. It's like they do want to take breaks, but I think it speaks to how central a lot of these apps have become to their social lives and how integral they are to organizing and communicating and like sharing these moments with their friends. So even if they want to break away, it's logistically difficult for them, I would say.
Yes. If you take a break from something, you step back for a week, a month, whatever, when you look back where all of your friends are, if they're still in that same forum, you're probably going to go back because, to your point, that's where they hang out now. I looked at our numbers. Penetration has slowed way down, but it's still very high and it's still technically going up. So our numbers estimate that 78% of smartphone users 18 to 24 years old use TikTok. Next year, 79, then 80, then 81. But it is the second lowest growth of any age category, around 1.5% each year. But that's mainly because it's basically everyone in that age category. Story two. Is the new push to ban TikTok for real? Questions Nicole Nuria of Vox. A bill to ban the short-form video app was just passed in the US House last week, called the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act. Because TikTok is owned by ByteDance, a Chinese company, and some in the US government think the Chinese government could use TikTok data against them. President Biden is on board. He said, if they pass it, I'll sign it. Should also be noted that the president is currently using TikTok after joining last month to court young voters. TikTok responded by telling its users to call their members of Congress in protest, saying it would infringe on their constitutional right to free expression and harm businesses and creators across the US, Ms. Nuria notes. So Jasmine, the likelihood of TikTok getting banned this time around is how much out of 10?
It's hard to put a number on it, but I will give it about a 3 out of 10.
Okay. So
really, I would have given it a percentage, and I would have given it about 25%.
Okay, you can give a percentage too. 2.5 out of 10. Done.
Yeah. I mean, so there is a lot more momentum around this bill, and it's moved really swiftly through the House. It still faces a lot of challenges. It has to make its way through the Senate. And so there's a lot of ifs and a lot of steps it still needs to take in order for this to become a law. And it's also really important to note that this isn't, you know, a TikTok ban per se. The bill is trying to force a divestiture of TikTok. And if it doesn't do that, then it would face a ban here in the US. What I think is, you know, really interesting is, you know, of course, this isn't TikTok's first rodeo. So it has its game plan down. It mobilized users, it mobilized creators who have been the loudest voices in opposition of this bill. And I'm going to repeat something I said in March 2023, exactly a year ago, when we were talking about that potential TikTok ban. And that is that it's a complicated situation for TikTok, right? Because on the one hand, it wants to show how important it is to US consumers and the US economy. But demonstrating that also confirms what a lot of the proponents of the bill are saying, which is that TikTok has massive influence over the American public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, a fine line to walk. What happens next? As Jasmine pointed out, the bill will now have to get through the Senate and then could also face legal challenges in the courts. If ByteDance is forced to sell TikTok, the Chinese government would have to approve it as well on their side. It would then have a bit of time, maybe 6 months or so, to get the deal done. And by that time, Mr. Trump could be president again. And this time he says he opposes the bill, whereas before he was saying that he would ban it when he was in office. And finally, there are also large US investors in TikTok who are likely to turn on a lobbying offensive.
And let's not forget that Trump was the first one really to try to force a sale of TikTok back in 2020, and that fell through.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, yeah. We've definitely been here before. Ms. Nuria of Vox also pointing out that the federal court recently overturned a Montana law that sought to ban TikTok. So at a state level.
I agree. I think they're not going to risk angering a vital voting segment in an election year that's already kind of disgruntled over a lack of student loan forgiveness, U.S. involvement in foreign wars. Mm. Like, they're not going to exacerbate that by taking away a popular social media platform.
Yeah.
I mean, the other question of like, yeah, they're not going to try to anger those voters, but whether or not those voters go to the polls is a different story.
Yeah, good point. That's all we got time for this episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Paola.
Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you to Jasmine.
Thank you, Marcus. Thanks, everyone.
And thanks to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, Stuart runs the team, and Sophie does our social media. Thanks to everyone for listening in. We hope to see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Nielsen.